Today is December 29th, 2021. My goodness, the year is almost over. This is episode number 566 of the Apple Context Machine. That's a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Brian Chaffin, editor-in-chief of the Mac Observer. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, you can shoot me a note over at macobserver.com/contextmachine. And I'm so very lucky to have Jeff Gamet with me today. Jeff, Trooper, you.
Brian.
Yeah.
Other Trooper.
Yay me.
Yay you. Yay. Yeah, it's awesome to get to hang out with you yet again. I genuinely enjoy our time together.
Oh, yeah.
And I realized that we're getting to wrap up the year together.
We are getting to wrap up the year together. We are, yeah. That's fantastic. By the way, Art Sabers, remember we talked about Art Sabers?
Yes.
They have introduced a new, but it's not on their site. Wait, is it on their site? They introduced a new one. I got some kind of email notification. They have a new lightsaber.
Well, that's cool.
It is cool, but I'm not seeing it on their website. It's Darth Nihilus. I found it. I'll link to it in the show notes, folks, if you care. No one yelled at us for talking about Art Sabers last time.
Well, I can't imagine why anyone would, because, you know, lightsabers are cool.
It's Darth Nihilus. Do you know who that is?
I do know who Darth Nihilus is.
Do tell, please.
Darth Nihilus is, now I'm going to end up getting it wrong. He's one of the Sith, and I believe it's from, the Old Republic, but he's very, is it okay to say he's very badass?
Sure. Why not? It's our show. It's my show.
Yeah, there you go.
Screw you.
It's your show.
So technically, you can say whatever you want. I guess it's up to me to bleep it.
But oh,
I did,
right.
I did not bleep that, as anyone who is listening to the show knows. Anyway, they've got a new lightsaber. It's for Darth Nihilus. It is an interesting looking one. I think it's angled. Is it angled? No, it's not angled. One picture makes it look angled.
Hold on. I have to, Santa keeps dancing across my screen.
Yeah, it's super annoying. They've got this, the Art Sabers folks have this Christmas promo thing going, and Santa gets just like marching across your screen all in the way.
Yeah. You know, this lightsaber is the most phallic lightsaber I have ever seen.
I was thinking it. I debated whether or not to say anything. It's like a phallic showerhead.
It totally is.
Look at the third to the last image. Right? That's a phallic looking showerhead.
It totally is. Yeah.
It's pretty cool though. I'm assuming that's what Darth, I don't remember that character. Is he in the books or is he in like the Clone Wars or something?
No. So this would be way before Clone Wars. So this would be books. And I believe, he's in the Knights of the Old Republic video game.
I see. Interesting. So I assume this is what his looked like. I don't actually know. Anyway, so Art Sabers has a new lightsaber. I think I have settled.
Clearly, a multifunction lightsaber.
Clearly. I think I'm going to get either the Obi-Wan or the Luke Skywalker one. I think I'm going to get one.
Let's see. That's back in the Elite Sabers.
Yeah.
Yeah, I totally get it. The Luke Skywalker is one of the dueling lightsabers.
Yep. Yeah, I need a dueling one, even though I'm like never going to find anyone to duel with.
Doesn't matter. You want to feel confident swinging it around in your living room.
Breaking furniture left and right. Yeah. Lamps
right.
Lamps go into the floor, shatter, plants everywhere. But anyway, probably one of those two, and I haven't decided which.
I can appreciate that. I mean, they're really cool looking lightsabers.
They are. If anyone has any advice or input or commentary for me, let me know. ACM@MacObserver.com. So, right, Jeff, Wealthfront sponsoring this show this week. I'm going to tell you about Wealthfront a little bit later.
Cool.
Yeah, that's good stuff. It is good stuff. Let's see. CES has pretty much announced that
that they're phoning it in.
That they're phoning it in. Yeah, that's one way to put it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, on one hand, I feel kind of bad for the whole CES team.
Oh, because, yeah. Everybody involved.
Yeah. Because, you know, I mean, huge, huge show. And they have exhibitors just dropping out faster than news sites can write it up.
Yeah. It's true. And, you know, we have had a presence at CES for really, we've had a significant presence at CES since Macworld ended.
Right. Little bit of nostalgia. I remember going that first year that we went.
Mm-hmm.
I went solo the first year.
Right.
Because it was like, okay, let's do an experiment and see if there's enough here for us to really have coverage. And it kicked my ass because it was so big. And I didn't have the luxury of having someone that I could meet up there that was a veteran. And so I learned it all baptism by fire.
The hard way, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But clearly there was enough to cover and we kept going back.
Yeah. And we did it together for several years, you and I.
Mm-hmm.
And then you eventually left TMO.
Mm-hmm.
And God, did I go a year without you? I think I did. I didn't like it.
I thought you stopped going. I think the last year that I went, you weren't there.
Oh, went without me, huh?
I went without you. So let's see if I can pull everyone back out of my memory bank. So me, Dave,
John F.
Braun. John F. Braun. And I feel like there was someone else, and now I'm feeling really bad. Was it Kelly?
Might have been Kelly or, no, I don't think it was Kelly. Or if Kelly was there, I don't think it was for us.
Oh, okay. That could be why I'm remembering Kelly.
Right.
I feel like there was a fourth person there doing coverage. Yeah, and we were doing the shows like daily observations.
Yeah,
we were doing those from a hotel room. Everyone holding mics in our hands, and yeah,
right. Yeah. So this year, though, last year was just canceled.
Mm-hmm.
And this year, like, do you remember what are they doing exactly this year?
Well, this year. They have a bunch of virtual stuff happening, and they scaled back the expo area, and it's just becoming smaller and smaller.
I bet they end up having to cancel it.
At this point, at this point. There's probably companies that are already either in Las Vegas or on their way to Las Vegas and have already arranged to have booth stuff shipped and it's on the way. So we are so close now I think it would be very difficult for them logistically to cancel the show, or at least the in-person part.
Right. Yeah, fair enough. And it's not like Vegas or Nevada is going to impose any stiffer regulations on them. Both have been very lax in general at doing that sort of thing. Now, here's the thing about the show. If you're listening to this and you don't care about CES, I get it. If you're listening to this and you used to care about Macworld but don't care about CES, I get it. Macworld was a consumer show. It was very much about companies and Apple reaching out to people, to consumers, mm-hmm. and getting that message out and getting that FaceTime. And And CES is not. Yes, people like us would be there to get news to disseminate to people, but the people weren't, no one was there. And so like, you know, real consumers aren't really talking about what the show's like because they're just not there. The show wasn't for them. But the thing about that show that keeps it relevant in the age of like streaming everything is that face-to-face relationships matter, and they're probably always going to matter. And CES is about making deals more than anything else.
Yes. Yeah. That's the thing that most people never see. And when I say most people, you know, I'm referring to the people that don't actually get to go to CES. They just see the news bites and the cool things we find and the crazy stuff that we might see, but they don't see the business side, right. And that's a huge part of CES. Companies show up. There are two phases of CES. The very very beginning, that's the phase where all the companies want to get media exposure. And then there's phase two, the rest of the show, where they're either trying to buy or sell a product.
I would imagine that let me back up. Macworld, I think, was about 60% meeting with the press and 40% meeting with consumers, trying to get buzz, just trying to connect with people, trying to, you know, just like it was a way for companies to actually meet their potential customers and their customers back in the day.
Right.
CES, I would say it's 90% making retail and distribution deals. 10%.
Exactly. Press. Right. Yeah. And that press stuff is all compressed right in the beginning. And that's why you would see a lot of coverage right at the start, and that there would be media outlets that would show up just for the first couple days, because that's when the media specific events are going on, and then they'd leave.
Right. Right. But the show is still important for the press, and the show is still important for consumers because of that. Because those face to face connections are super important when it comes to making deals, but also being able to see product and usually but not always hold product and maybe even be able to use it a little bit is super important for like being able to convey any kind of information to people too. So I certainly hope that when we finally get to the other end of this pandemic, which I'm an optimist, that CES is going to come back roaring and strong, and like that businesses in particular are going to find that they can do stuff over Zoom, right? But it turns out there is still a lot of value in those face to face meetings.
There is a lot of value in the face-to-face meetings.
Yep, but I'm specifically saying that I'm thinking that having those taken away will actually prove that, and not just hoping that that's what they find.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think that CES is ultimately going to be a different show in the way it happens. And what I mean is that it will become permanently a hybrid show where there's the on-location stuff, but they will continue to do remote events for media and vendors.
Yeah.
And a lot of people don't realize there's actually sessions, classes, and stuff that happen at CES. And I think that will become part of the show that's available remotely as well.
Yeah. Yeah, that's all fair. That's all fair. So it's going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting to see what happens next year. It's going to be interesting to see what kind of coverage comes out of, including coverage from TMO, what kind of coverage comes out of this year's event. I know that Dave was really looking forward to going, and that he has been really torn on whether or not to go until that sort of
fell apart.
Until got taken out of his hands. So Dave is the king of face to face relationships.
He is.
Yeah. So
absolutely.
You know, he always made tremendous. He got tremendous value out of CES for a large number of reasons.
And I loved going to CES. I think I'm one of the few people back when I was a journalist all the time that genuinely loved and looked forward to going to CES every year.
I look forward to going so I can hang with you and see Dave and
oh, I just want to reach through the studio glass and give you a hug right now.
But I'm too old and fat to walk the Las Vegas showroom floors.
But you are so huggable.
True. I make an excellent pillow. All right. Let's see, Jeff. Let's move along. Let's actually move along. Let's move along to the fascinating and everyday world of brain implants.
Oh yeah. Have you gotten yours yet?
not yet. And I really want one, but at the same time, I don't know how early I want to be on the old brain implant.
I can appreciate that. I mean, look at me. They put, 25 pin SCSI port in the back of my head. I know, it freaked me out too. Yeah.
Sorry about that.
That's all right. It's really stressful when the dogs hear about SCSI ports being put in people's heads. The crappy part though was that you always have to have the spare port for a Terminator, and you do not want to know where that is.
Yeah. So when we look at sci-fi,
I love that you just completely moved on and did not acknowledge what I said at all.
No, I'm building off of what you said.
Awesome. Oh, okay.
And it's actually, yeah. So, first of all, secondly, Ichabod's not having it. Secondly, it's exactly what the SCSI port reference is what set me off on this. Sci-fi always shows people jacking in, looking, and now I'm going to have a real problem coming up with even a single show, but where, they'll stick a big,
how about cable. The Matrix?
Sure. The Matrix. Right. Or even Neuromancer. The movie made from the William Gibson, book. Cyberpunk book. And you've got this big old jack in the back of your head, and you've got these big old thick cables, and and it's always sort of standardized. They don't talk about it being standardized, but everyone who's jacking into the net or jacking into whatever it is that they're going to call the online world is they're doing so, and it's essentially all in the same way. But here's the reality: it's not how tech works.
No, it's not.
And once this stuff starts evolving and actually happening, it's going to evolve super fast. And I feel like I am happy to jump on whatever new product Apple comes out with. You know, like, you know, I get every new iPhone. I tend to get every new iPad Pro, or at least I have for the last several iPad Pros. Same with Apple Watch, you know, things like that. But do I really want the today's jack on the back of my neck when tomorrow's is probably going to be half the size in 6 months? And that's going to keep me on the fence for a long time, assuming it actually happens in my lifetime.
You know, actually, it's a really good point. Is there going to have to be some sort of regulation that standardizes ports?
But and, do we want that? Europe wants to do that to phones. Do we want to be stuck with today's jack? I mean, that to me is one of the most misguided. I am not an enemy of regulation. I believe that healthy capitalism requires this constant tension between regulators and the free market. And sometimes you're going to have a little bit of one or the other, and it's going to go back and forth all the time. But this notion of standardizing on a jack for smartphones is beyond stupid. And I don't certainly want that to be the case for something that's going to go into my head come the day.
Right. Yeah, I agree. Whatever that standard would be, it's not going to be something that is future proof.
No, there isn't. There is no future proof when it comes to a port.
So, all right. So here's a question to go along with that. What happens when the technology advances mm-hmm. and the port that you have in your head today mm-hmm. is essentially obsolete mm-hmm. and there's a newer and better port? Do you go and have more surgery and have a different port plugged into your brain?
Yeah. Get some reconstructive surgery. I mean, we should mention why we're even talking about this. Andrew did a link teaser. I think yesterday. Was that yesterday? What day is that? The 27th. Days ago.
Yeah.
This is Wednesday.
2 days ago.
Right. To a story about a guy who has a, you know, very early brain implant and was able to tweet by thinking about it. It's the first direct, I'm quoting, the first direct thought tweet was created wirelessly from Mr. O'Keefe, who is an Australian, according to the company. What company? He has an issue with ALS. He had a brain computer interface called Stentrode installed last year. The implant, quote, designed to enable patients to wirelessly control digital devices through thought, was inserted via the jugular vein to avoid drilling into the skull, which seems good.
Okay.
Good. Yeah, no joke. And so, and he was able to send out a tweet basically by thinking through the process. I don't know how that actually worked. And that's why we're talking about this today.
So his tweet was, "No need for keystrokes or voices. I created this tweet just by thinking it. Hashtag hello world BCI.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, we are far, far, far. I'm going to you talk for a second. I'm going to yell at the dog.
All right. Okay. So here's the thing. It just kind of makes me sad that the first thing that someone did after they got a brain implant where uh-huh. they could use it to communicate was send out a tweet.
Okay. It wasn't his first thing. There's no way that was the first thing he had done.
I know, but still.
It's the first thing that we saw. And it was.
It's the first thing that we saw.
But that was done for marketing. I get what you're saying. I get what you're saying, but it was a marketing thing.
Yeah, of course it was.
Okay. So we are at the way early stages. I mean, like, we're not, these aren't baby steps. This is like, we're in the twinkle in somebody's eye stage of brain implants.
Right. Yeah, we are.
And I mean, it's going to be years, if not decades, really, before this sort of thing is even close to common, really, probably even, I mean, I don't know. It's going to be a while. But at the same time, it is clearly happening. And how exciting is this person who is suffering from ALS to be able to communicate this way?
I think it's very cool. And while I'm sure a lot of people are looking at this like you have mentioned, sort of like Neuromancer, where they can jack into the network, I'm looking at it from the medical perspective. That's where I see the excitement, where someone that is otherwise paralyzed now has a brain implant that allows them to control, say, an exoskeleton, and it gives them full mobility.
Right. And this is just essentially like, this is just doing input. So, you know, we're way before that. And one of the things that you and I have talked about several times on the show, and I certainly have talked about it elsewhere, I don't know if you have, is the idea of having a brain implant that is hopefully adding what you see, not just controlling what you see. So, you know, we talked about it from the standpoint of like AR goggles and then AR glasses or VR glasses. Actually VR probably needs to stay goggles. And then eventually how we'd probably go to some kind of form of a contact lens. And then eventually we should be able to have some kind of implant in our head that directly interfaces with the ocular lobe in our brain. I forget what it's called, so that we can have AR information projected onto our vision without actually having to have any kind of display or other form of glass in between us and the world.
Right. And we have talked about this, and people that remember our conversations are all right now shouting Futurama lines, primarily shut up and take my money, because that's the reference I always bring up, the iPhone, EYE phone from Futurama, where it actually gets implanted behind your eye.
Right. This is different. This is about getting input from the human to the computer, not having the computer essentially, you know, doing anything like controlling what you see. And then you mentioned another form of potential interfacing, which would be to control, say, an exoskeleton, like for someone who is has some form of mobility impairment. Right. And I mean, like, there are all kinds of ways that this technology can and will go, assuming that civilization does not end.
That's a pretty big if. Yeah.
So, and another thing I'd like to add is that there is a world of difference between being able to send a tweet by thought and being able to be in a fully immersive virtual world as envisioned by Numbnut Zuckerberg. Or, by the way, you can join our Facebook group over at macobserver.com/contextmachine. or you know, like the a brain implant interface by any other name is not necessarily a brain implant interface. I mean, like, there's just – and again, we're just so early in this stuff, but yet it is happening. Like, this development is interesting.
It is. It's really fascinating. And I find it very exciting. At the same time, I find it incredibly scary, because if something like this is done wrong, then the damage that it could cause to people it's horrible.
Yeah. And then, I mean, like, I don't know, there are perhaps some industrialists today who think that they know better than any kind of regulatory body. And, you know, could well start doing brain implants in space where, you know, they're outside of any regulatory authorities' reach, And, you know, who knows what they would do? I don't trust the wisdom of any given exec bazillionaire any more than I trust I don't entirely trust the wisdom of any particular tech bazillionaire any more than I entirely trust the wisdom of a government or regulatory body. So, And there are no regulations, to my knowledge, that cover this stuff yet.
There are regulations from the medical standpoint, and I'm sorry, I'm multitasking really poorly because I'm actually looking up the company behind this while I'm talking. Because if I read my info correctly, this guy, oh yeah, Tom Oxley, CEO of Synchron, the company that made the brain implant, and the tweet came from his account. So, okay, so apparently Thomas Oxley is the CEO of the company and the recipient of the brain implant.
Oh, huh.
Talk about eating your own dog food.
Wait a minute. O'Keefe, the guy who sent out the tweet is named O'Keefe.
It is?
Yeah. But maybe, the guy has one too. Maybe the CEO also.
Maybe he has one too. Yeah, because the tweet itself is coming from Thomas Oxley's account.
Oh. All right. Huh. Well, unfortunately, we sorted all of this out before we started recording.
Yeah. Because so, but anyhow, about. Yeah. There's FDA regulations that that you have to follow, and you have to get approval because we're talking about medical devices. So there's some stuff there already. There's going to be more, hopefully, regulations and guidelines for how something like this is done. But how,
I mean, set up by whom? That's the problem, too. I mean, again, like, it's not like the regulators know what's what here either.
Yeah, this is uncharted territory.
This is completely uncharted territory. And it's a world where anyone who's audacious enough... Anyone who's audacious enough to work on this probably has a fairly big ego. That's a guess. That's completely a guess. I haven't met any of these people. I don't know anything about them. They could be the most humble people on the planet for all I know. But it kind of seems like it takes a little bit of chutzpah to chutzpah. What's the correct pronunciation? Do you know?
Let's go with chutzpah. But because I like how that sounds.
Okay, it takes some.
It sounds more sanitary, at least.
To think that you can do this, and it probably takes some audacity also to think that you can regulate it. So yeah, I don't know. Weird world that we're in. Things are happening super fast. Like, you know, super fast.
Yep. Yep. Exciting and at the same time, a little bit scary.
Exciting and a little bit scary. You know what is exciting but not scary, Jeff? Wealthfront. Wealthfront. So I am a big believer in investing, and I came to this late in life, unfortunately. And I wish that I had started investing at an early age, and I didn't. But here's the thing. Wealthfront is an app that can make investing easy. A lot of investment apps, they make it easy to start trading, but just because it's easy to do doesn't mean you know what you're doing necessarily, and that's what makes Wealthfront different. They make it easy to invest, and they make it easy to get smarter about investing. After answering just a couple of questions, Wealthfront will build you a diversified portfolio of low-cost index funds in minutes. You can also build your own portfolio. You can do things like clean energy funds, crypto trusts. One of the things that Wealthfront mentions a lot is like cannabis-oriented companies, technology. There's hundreds of other investments you can make. And Wealthfront even offers a socially responsible portfolio. And that's a mix of funds that are built around human rights, climate change, sustainability, and diversity, which is probably going to be of interest to a lot of people listening to the show. And best of all, this is one of the most important things. Wealthfront is totally automated. They do all the trading, all the rebalancing, and they even help you lower your tax bill while you invest. And here's the thing. Because you are listening to this show, to start building your wealth and get your first $5,000 managed for free for life, you can go to wealthfront.com/ACM. That's WEALTHFRONT.com, wealthfront.com/ACM to start building your wealth. And one more time, that's wealthfront.com/ACM. Get started today. I'm a big believer in investing. I absolutely think this stuff is super important, and I hope that you check them out. I appreciate them sponsoring this week's show. Jeff Gamet.
Brian Cheffin.
There was another bit of sort of, I don't know, like tomorrow is kind of scary. Anyway, there is a link teaser that Andrew Orr wrote up for us. It's a proposed bill. It has not been signed into law, and it would be a state law in New York State. But if it does become a state law, it is likely going to have national implications. And this bill would make social media companies accountable for disinformation on their platforms.
Huh. Yeah.
I have a very strong gut reaction to this. And that's,
I would love to hear that.
Be careful what you wish for.
I think that's a pretty reasonable gut reaction.
Most people think that the information is what somebody else does. Everything that you're consuming is straight up gospel. But then the other guys, the other side, those other people, that other group, they're putting out disinformation. Right? Mm-hmm. And you may be right about that. You may be right about that. But someone out there thinks that your group is putting out the disinformation. That your side are the bad guys, especially in this polarized world that we currently live in. And this seems like a really treacherous path to trod.
Yeah, I agree. And it's a difficult place to be. I mean, you have to balance, in the United States at least, the right to freedom of speech with social responsibility, which is something that our court system has had to deal with for over 200 years, and trying to find that balance is hard. And you're right. It ultimately becomes something that is subjective, and it's whoever has the authority in the moment is deciding what is fine, what is misinformation, and that can change as the parties in power change. So
right.
it can be a really fluid thing and difficult for companies to comply with.
We have, this is so freaking complex, because we have right now, from my perspective, and I'm going to illustrate the point that I made earlier, where I think that one particular group or maybe even multiple groups is responsible for the disinformation. The misinformation. And we have a situation right now that threatens democracy, and it threatens even perhaps civilization itself from the standpoint of you know, the like the anti-science nonsense that's out there, the resistance to science when it comes to medical science that we're seeing. And it's, to me, tremendously dangerous. But who's going to decide what is disinformation and what is not? You're going to hold the companies accountable. So are you going to make the companies the arbiter? Or are you going to hold them accountable and yet they're not even able to be the arbiter? I mean, like there is no regulatory path that is easy here.
No. Now, I could see where some people would say, oh, but look, you know, if we're talking about science-related stuff, that is much easier to show what's legit information and what's misinformation, because you can look at the science. Okay, fine, but there are people that don't care what the science is and will then use that as their lever to try and suppress speech that they don't agree with.
Yeah, laws like this can be used for exactly the opposite of what they're intended to do, depending on who holds the reins of power. I'm just echoing your point.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what makes these kinds of efforts so fraught with peril.
Mm-hmm.
And I also don't think they should be done at a state level.
Yes, I agree. Holding social media companies or websites or whatever to a different standard in each state is just a recipe for disaster.
Okay. Can I argue against myself?
Sure.
California, the state that I live in, was mm-hmm. making environmental laws that were way tougher than what the feds were doing, especially under the previous administration. And I was happy about that. That is a perfect example of be careful of what you wish for. You know, what the people that agree with you are doing is great, and what the other people want to do is bad. And so you want to stop what the other people are doing, but it turns out that can have unintended and entirely and anticipatable.
I love that. Anticipatable.
Let's go with anticipatable results.
Yeah, because that sounds more awesome than predictable.
Predictable. That's okay. A great word.
I just made it up.
Why didn't someone think of that word before?
I know. Well, you know, Brian, we are on the bleeding edge.
Yes.
So my guess is that before long, you'll be able to find the word predictable in a dictionary.
Oh, okay. Well, I will let you know. I'm going to check later.
Okay. Check later.
And I'll see what the dictionary has to say.
Awesome. Yeah. Give it like 20 minutes to see if you know, everything catches up.
Okay. All right.
You have to deal with caches and stuff.
Exactly. Yeah.
Where was I going? Oh, right. California. So California has, in many instances, historically, created laws or regulations that have then rippled out across the rest of the United States. And in some cases, there will be a stricter regulation in California, and companies will just comply with that across the United States instead of making a California only product. And so there are situations where letting a state set their own regulations or laws has benefited the rest of the country, but that's not always the case.
It's not always going to be the case, especially when it comes to trying to do something like regulate speech. It is just be careful what you wish for, because you might get it.
Yeah, and it might not be what you thought it was.
And it might not be what you thought it was or hoped. Mm-hmm. Or even feared.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, this is just a proposed law. It's you know, in the state of
so
of
New it's York. Still a bill.
Still a bill. It's only a bill.
Sitting I'm there. Just a bill.
Capitol Hill or whatever. Yeah. Whatever. Whatever Albany calls their Capitol building location. Anyway, regardless, it is just a it is just a bill. But there have been noises about the like no one is happy with the state of social media, and it's usually because there are other people who are misusing it, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and no, so there have been tons of noise about regulation on this front from the U.S., from different states, from individual politicians, from the EU. And of course, we have China and Russia with other authoritarian regimes with, you know, massive regulations on what can happen on social media. So I would be very surprised that this particular bill got signed into law, but there's going to be more stuff in the works. Increasingly so.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, and eventually we will have a hodgepodge of regulations and laws. And I'm curious to see how social media companies deal with that.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, and then I guess because I get the opportunity to do so, you know, this is the world where Mark Zuckerberg does not have the wisdom to wield the power that he has amassed. That's part of the problem in the first place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
You know, I don't want to derail you. What were we going to say?
Oh no, I'm off the rails. Go run okay. with it.
Do you remember how we talked many times about how much like we wish that Apple had bought Instagram? Back in the day.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And, right. And like we wish that Ping, I still wish that Ping had been a thing. And I think that Ping could have been a thing. That it for, you know, those who may or may not remember, Ping was Apple's short-lived music-oriented social network that was supposed to exist partially on Facebook.
And Apple shot themselves in the foot live on stage before a studio audience on that one by announcing a Facebook deal that actually hadn't been sealed yet.
Or, well, by announcing Facebook integration when the deal had not been sealed yet. And then Mark Zuckerberg,
there we go. Yes.
You know, was all like, my understanding, I wasn't there, was all butthurt about it and was like, you know, yeah, you can't use our testing. And, you know, so that didn't happen. Basically, Facebook pulled Apple's API access for Ping, and Ping ended up being a big failure. And then Apple has tried to mm-hmm. do a couple of other social networks through iTunes and through Apple Music, and those seem to have not gone anywhere. And I've often lamented, you know, like, I wish Apple was in social media. I'm going to guess it turns out that Apple was pretty darn smart for not having made more of an effort of being into social media.
You know, I have to agree with you. There was a time when I wished Apple had a stronger presence in the social media space with their own product. And now we're at the point where I'm glad they don't have that presence.
Yeah, at this particular point, I feel like Apple probably would have managed whatever kind of social media platform better than Facebook has managed all the problems that it's had, all the decisions that Facebook has made in the last several years. But, you know, I mean, I'm guessing that Apple is pleased not to have to deal with that.
I'm sure they are. And it makes it a lot easier to focus on being a strong player in the media space, you know, with things like Apple TV Plus.
Yeah.
They don't have to focus on social media at all. I mean, other than just using it as a promotional tool.
Yeah, as a member.
Right.
As you know. Yeah. Just like you and me. Apple's just like you and me.
They are just like you and me.
Just, yeah, because they're people. Apple is a person.
Right. I've had drinks with Apple. Yeah. Generally nice guy.
Generally, yeah, for sure. For sure. All right. I feel like right there, if I had been really smart, I just would have like bum, 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 bum. But instead, I'm going to point that out.
That's okay. No one will notice.
All right. That is this week's Apple Context Machine. The last one of 2021. If you have anything to comment on, add or question, you can write me at acm@macobserver.com. Our bandwidth is provided by CacheFly. Bases by Boom, recorded just for TMO. Jeff, tell me three places where people can find you.
Okay. How about, let's go with Instagram since we were talking about that.
I love your Instagram feed.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Jay Gamut. How about on YouTube?
Okay.
So youtube.com/JayGamut.
Jay Gamut, I'm sensing a theme. That's two.
Uh-huh. How about buy me a coffee?
Oh, buymeacoffee.com?
/JayGamut.
/JayGamut. Again, that theme. It's like you're so much better at this than I am.
Oh, I love you, Brian.
All right. Thank you to Wealthfront for sponsoring this last show of the year. And remember to start building your wealth and get your first $5,000 managed for free for life. Go to wealthfront.com/ACM. And on that happy note,